Bucket, and welcome back to Getting There. Today's episode is a little challenging for your host because I'm still on a business trip in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Right now, I am at Town Center, at the center of Virginia Beach, a little project they started a number of years ago, and you may hear in the background the beginnings of the day as commuters arrive for work, the sound of a fountain, probably during this broadcast, the sound of some birds. Why am I here? Well, I needed a place to record from my handheld, which I'll pre-engineer on the show, because I just don't have a reliable internet connection where I'm staying. So that's neither here nor there, but I wanted you to know because the sound may be quite different. Okay, last week was the first Getting There episode, the money show about life, that was entirely about money. My apologies, it was important. It's something you need to know. We're going to expand on a couple of things from that show during this one. But this show is basically have three segments. One will be the expansion on that, which is about money. One is purely about life. And one is both. And I'd like to start with the one that is both. You know, I have to confess, and my apologies to friends of mine on Facebook, somebody made a comment to me that gave me a little inspiration for the show today, but also made me want to have a little fun with them. So I posted a picture of a mansion in Indian Beach, Sarasota, with the comment, "I finally found the right house." Now, the apology is to friends of mine who were very happy for me that I was able to afford this mansion on the Gulf of Mexico. While I appreciate that, there's a point I want to make here there's a couple. First, some of our friends want to see us do very well monetarily. And so for those of my friends who thought, wow, Paul has knocked the ball out of the park. No, I wouldn't buy that kind of house, not because there's anything wrong with it, but because it's just not what I would want. It's a beautiful home. I have no idea what it costs, but my guess would be a minimum of $5 million. The point I was attempting to make in response to a comment someone made about it must be easy for you to say, because clearly they felt it's something somebody wealthy would say. The point I want to make is, why would you judge what someone says or recommends or does based on their monetary wealth, which may or may not have anything to do with why they're wealthy? Let me repeat that. Why would you judge advice, whether it's from a friend or from a professional, from an attorney, an accountant, an investment advisor, a financial planner, a broker, based on their net worth? Based on their net worth. There was a fella about, 35 to 40 years ago, who was fascinated by the wealthy. He was absolutely fascinated by the wealthy. And the reason was, they lived in an area of the country, in the New York area, where there was sort of a division between a very wealthy area and a middle-income average area. And they lived in the middle-income average area. But they decided to jump this fence and go trick-or-treating in the wealthy area. Then they did very well. One of the houses they went to had one of those actual bells. You would pull a handle to ring. And there was a note on the bell that said, "My husband is not feeling well. Please select an envelope from the box representing the number of people in your party and have a happy Halloween." So there were two of them. We grabbed an envelope marked two, shoved it in their bag, went on to collect some more candy. Well, when they got home to divide up the candy, they opened the envelope. And there was two $100 bills, one for each. Thomas Stanley suddenly became fascinated with, how can people do that? How did they get there? What are the characteristics of the wealthy? And he wrote a book that you probably have not seen, but you may have seen his other two, called Marketing to the Affluent. when I became a trust officer, it was one of the first books I read. It was in the Sovereign Bank Corporate Library. When Sovereign Bank was acquired, the library got rid of all its books, and the librarian had known I had checked that book out the most, and she saved it for me, so I still have my copy. Marketing the Fluent has a lot of information in it on how do American wealthy people behave? What are their characteristics? I want to give you some examples of that on today's show. We're also, as I mentioned earlier, going to expand on retirement income lock, why I recommend that for those of you who are approaching retirement and are retired, because there's a storm coming in the bond market that, quite frankly, is just not a good idea for you to participate in. We're going to take a break. When we get back, some of the research from Thomas Stanley's book. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. You know, it occurs to me, you may wonder, why do I take breaks, other than to clear my throat, on a show that really isn't commercial radio? Well, in this particular case, I saw a school bus coming and I knew the noise it would make in the background. Before I forget, the two books you may have seen by Thomas Stanley are The Millionaire Next Door and The Millionaire Mind. Both are very good books. If you want to know more about how wealthy people live and behave, and in what ways it's different than the rest of us. Incidentally, unfortunately, Thomas Stanley passed away in a car accident a number of years ago, but his daughter is also a researcher, and I'll put links to the site where you can get more information about the wealthy in America and who they are and what they do. The two books, as I said, are The Millionaire Next Door and The Millionaire Mind that I know are still available on Amazon and in bookstores everywhere. Here's the point I want to make. There's actually multiple points I want to make with this. So I post a house. And again, I apologize to friends of mine who were very happy for me that I had this mansion in Sarasota in Indian Beach overlooking the Gulf of Mexico. It's a beautiful mansion. But just so you know, it wouldn't matter how much money I have. That's not my thing. Now, that does not mean there's anything wrong with anybody buying a mansion and living on the Gulf of Mexico in a big house. If that's their thing and they can afford it, they should do it. One of the points I want to make is they should do it, but that doesn't mean we should judge them based on that. We shouldn't really judge anybody. I mean, we all have to do it to a certain degree. We have to judge who we spend our time with. You know, what I call mini judgments, judgments that are unavoidable in life. Would I rather go to the baseball game or go to the party or sit at home and read a book? Those are decisions we make subconsciously and automatically. But I'm going to talk about politics just briefly, not talking about any particular candidate, not endorsing anyone or shooting down anyone today, but overall politics. Over the past 30, 40, 50 years, maybe longer. Some politicians create division. Walked myself into that sentence, didn't I? Some politicians and political parties create division between the wealthy and the not so wealthy or the poor. Some of them make us feel poor even when we're not. That's a little aside that has nothing to do with my main point. My point is that doesn't mean we should accept that division, does it? Look, wealth is simply a monetary reflection of either how hard somebody worked or how hard their parents did, or they got lucky. Some wealthy people stay that way. Some people become wealthy, and some people are wealthy and make mistakes. Or here's the two biggest killers of wealth: go through a divorce, which reduces their net worth dramatically, or develop a chronic health issue that just cuts down on what they're able to do. Now, that second one is even worse when you're not wealthy, okay? So I think it's 75% of bankruptcies are caused by a health issue, a chronic health issue. So what's the point? The point is, inside, regardless of what our net worth is, we're all the same. I mean, we're all different, but we're all the same. We should not be judging each other based on our wealth. Now, I want to give you an example of why that can be harmful in my profession. Around the same time I read Marketing the Affluent, I was still at Sovereign Bank in the early 90s. I was a trust officer, and one of my clients passed away, and they had three kids. And the three kids wanted to know, A, if the bank would be interested in continuing the management of the money, now in three names instead of one, and B, what it would cost and what we would do. So we scheduled a meeting with all three kids at one of the branches that was convenient to where they lived. They had a conference room. What I did not know is they were bringing with them a broker that was not affiliated with the bank at all. I don't know if you ever watched a political show called Crossfire, but that's in essence what this meeting became. They put me at one end of the table. The three of them sat in the middle. Well, not in the middle of the table, but you know what I mean. And they put the broker at the other end of the table. Well, without going into gory detail on the whole, really, in some ways, hysterical meeting, just funny that somebody would do that, the broker was wearing, I know he was wearing Ferragamos, a Rolex, and a gold nugget necklace. It wasn't an Armani suit, but it was close. Extremely fashionably dressed. He arrived in a black S-Class Mercedes. I believe it was a 500. I arrived in a Mazda 323 wearing Joseph Bank suit. You know, they had sales periodically back then where you'd get two suits for the price of one. An L.L. Bean button down with a tie. And I will confess, I wore Johnston & Murphy wingtips, which probably, those shoes probably cost more than the two suits combined, but shoes are very important, not necessarily the appearance of the shoes. I know some of you think the appearance is important, but if you're on your feet a lot, pick good shoes. Completely unrelated advice from your host. At any rate, two of the three children made the comment, why would we do business with a guy driving a Mazda when we can do business with someone who is clearly more successful? How not to choose your financial professional 101. How not to choose your financial professional 101. Did he become wealthy because he did a great job for his clients, or because he knows how to sell stuff to his clients? Is he actually wealthy, or did he get all that with a credit card? You don't know. And in Thomas Stanley's book, funny enough, he talks about when you see somebody getting out of a BMW, Mercedes, or a Lexus, and there's nothing wrong with those cars. I'm very partial to BMWs. I don't have one, but I used to, and they're very nice cars. I love the way they handle. At any rate, when you see someone like that, they're more likely to be a financial professional than one of America's wealthy, because they want to appear wealthy. They want to appear wealthy. Why? Because they know some of us judge based on that. But what if it's all an illusion? What if it's all an illusion? Old song, many of you will know, Welcome to the Grand Illusion. And that was Styx, Welcome to the Grand Illusion, the opening song on the Grand Illusion album. I want to focus on the second section of that song, but don't be fooled by the radio, the TVO, or the magazines. Did you know that TVO, it's a new word. Let's start that again. But don't be fooled by the radio, the TV, or the magazines. They show you photographs of how your life should be, but they're just someone else's fantasy. So if you think your life is complete confusion because you never win the game, just remember that it's a grand illusion. Key line, and deep inside, we're all the same. And then, of course, they loudly sing again, we're all the same. Well, of course, we're not all the same in every way. That'd be a little boring. But deep inside, we are all the same. So why do we judge anybody based on how successful they've been monetarily or how unsuccessful they've been monetarily? We don't know what someone else's goals are, okay? Since we're delving a little bit on politics and the division that's created by us resenting people who have money, which makes no sense and gets in our own way, what is this thing about income disparity that we're missing that amuses me in a not good way? Well, income disparity is some people make more than other people, sometimes in the same job. And of course, when it comes to a man and a woman both in the same job, should one be paid differently than the other? Well, of course not. Common sense. But when it comes to some people make $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, and other people make, you know, 10 grand a year, 15 grand a year, 25 grand a year, here's what's missing. What that person wants. There are people who could make a lot more money than they're making, but they'd rather, for instance, spend more time with their children. They'd rather spend more time fishing. They value their life, and the money is simply something they know they need, but they're not going to sacrifice their life to get it. They're not going to be in a career they don't want to be in simply for the money. That's an aside. What I want to focus on is, why is it that we judge other people and whether they're successful or not by what we see? Because I can tell you, when you look at Thomas J. Stanley's research into the wealthy, there are some surprises. And I've seen this in real life. I had a client, had a nice farmhouse. It wasn't huge, but it was a big farmhouse. And I happened to visit this client in the winter. He was heating only the kitchen and the living room. The rest of the house was ice cold because he didn't want to pay to heat the whole house. His wife had passed away. His kids had moved, you know, on with their lives. They would visit. They had a good relationship, but they didn't live with him. And he didn't need to heat more than what he was heating, according to him. The same client got upset because the bank accidentally charged a maintenance fee on his checking account for $10. And he knew we weren't supposed to charge, and he raised the issue. And I said, we'd be happy to refund that. You should not have been charged in the first place. I'm not really sure how it happened. I'll look into it. But at any rate, I'm going to refund the $10. This guy had over $5 million. In that comment, I said, $10 isn't a lot of money. It's the principle of the thing. But, you know, $10 will buy you lunch. The guy has over $5 million. He looked at me like I was insane and said, Paul, I can buy 3 lunches with $10. That should give you some perspective on the wealthy. What Thomas Stanley found out is the truly wealthy, okay, meaning at the time, people with a million or more, the millionaire next door, the millionaire mind, a lot of that crowd's pretty frugal. They don't live beyond their means, and they never did. They live well below their means. And that habit, incidentally, is hard to break. It's hard to break. There are people who worked relatively modest jobs, but they saved such a high percentage of what they were earning that their kids inherited a fairly significant amount of money from them. Why? Well, one thing is they wanted to provide for their families. Another is they wanted the security of knowing they had, there's a term for this I'm not using on the show, they had the ability to walk away from whatever they were doing because of what they'd saved. They knew if they had an emergency, they had the money. Okay, that's an admirable quality. That is an admirable quality for those of you who pronounce it that way. What we need to remember when we look at people we work with is, yes, you do want to work with someone, an attorney, an accountant, a financial service professional, whatever, who's good at what they do, but measure them not by their net worth, but by what they've done for their clients. And remember, when the politicians try to divide us based on our net worth, ignore it. Deep inside, we're all the same. Deep inside, we're all the same. So regardless of the size of your house, regardless of the size of your friend's house, let them be your friend or advisor or confidant or somebody you like to hang out with, not because of the size of their home and how it compares to yours, but because they have value regardless of what they choose to buy. For more on what millionaires look like in America, I highly recommend these two are available, The Millionaire Mind and The Millionaire Next Door. You'll find some surprising facts in there. I will tell you, one of the purposes in reading those books is it lets you know how many of them got there. And it's nothing for you to resent. It may be something for you to emulate if money is important to you. But if money's not important to you, that's a personal decision for you to make. It's your life that matters. You should make enough to live the way you want to live, however that is. Don't judge other people by what they want and how they do it. It's a waste of your time. So the main message I wanted to give here is deep inside we're all the same. Don't judge people, look up to them or look down upon them simply because of how they choose to live. You know, that type of thing can make you angry. And there's another song on this album, Grand Illusion by Styx, that fits. Angry Young Man. We'll be right back. And that was Styx, an angry young man. Ladies in the audience, there are also angry young women, but this was back 30, 40 years ago, and so I think mankind, angry mankind, so that you can participate, hopefully not, in being angry. We're going to conclude this segment, but the point I wanted to make is already made, but I just want to hammer it in. Choose the level of wealth you wish to have that fits your lifestyle to the extent that you can, and make the best of what you have, but don't resent people who do better, and don't judge people who don't do as well. We need to back away from using money as a measurement of success. Doesn't mean we don't need it. It's important. But aren't our lives more important? I think they are. Now, we're going to move to a non-money section here of the show, which means I'll be playing a song I've been dying to play. I just needed to find a way to fit it in. And today's show is the ideal place to do that. I do want to comment on one thing from last week, though, before I do. What I talked about last week is in my book, Retirement Income Lock, on how to live in retirement with a higher income than you can find in the bond market, and, oh, by the way, safety, income that's guaranteed for life. The product gets knocked left and right, and there are many products that deserve to be knocked. Call me, I'll knock some of them. But there are some that are perfectly suited for retirement. That's what they're designed for. They've been around longer than almost any other product in some ways, before America was founded, as an example. One of the things I brought up was transparency. Transparency. And I may have used this analogy, but I just want to bring it up again because I had somebody talking to me about it. They didn't quite get it. Have you ever noticed? Now, there's a trend these days where this isn't true, but in the past, shower curtains or opaque glass for your shower, so that when you're bathing, if somebody walks in, they don't get to see you in your, shall we say, nudity. Speaking of transparency, nudity would be transparent. There's nothing covering you up, except for this opaque glass or the shower curtain. Okay, what's transparency? Well, there's a trend, probably since the movie Psycho came out, where maybe you don't want to be enclosed in your shower. You'd like to be able to look out and make sure Norman Bates is not coming for you. So there's these clear glass showers, totally transparent. Anybody walks in, they can see whatever there is that you're washing. I hope you all have already eaten. At any rate, transparency is critically important in the investment in insurance industries, because you need to know not only what it is you're getting and buying and investing in, you need to know what you're paying for it. And that's all that word means. It's industry jargon, but it's important industry jargon because it's one of the few things, few little words of industry jargon that actually makes sense. Transparency. Insist on it, whoever you're dealing with. If you don't understand what you're paying or what you're buying, for heaven's sakes, don't buy it. Go somewhere else. You know, it's that simple. It's important. Okay, we now move to the life portion of the show. It's the part of the show I look forward to, because even though I'm in the money industry, it really is all about life for me. That's what's important. And I have a question for you. So does Derek Trucks. I want to know, do you have, and what is, your sweet inspiration?
Don't go, my
And that was Derek Trucks, Sweet Inspiration, one of my favorite Derek Trucks songs. I actually thought I'd already played this on the show. When I realized I didn't, I thought, oh, I need to talk about Sweet Inspiration. Now, of course, the song is about the inspiration we get from someone we're in a relationship with, which is, quite frankly, pretty awesome. But I'm curious, when you think of, and I hope you have one, what is relationship as well, but it's okay if you don't. What I'm looking for is, what inspires you? Why do you do what you do for a living? Why do you do what you do for a hobby? What is it that inspires you? Could be many, many different things. What's important is that we have a sweet inspiration. Life is about so much more than money, and quite frankly, I like to be around people that are inspired. They do things because they need to, they want to, they are inspired to do things. So I wanted to close the show with the question, what inspires you? Think about what inspires you. And then think about that rather than how much money somebody else has, how they got it, where they got it. I mean, that's useful to look at for purposes of emulating it, or curiosity. Gee, I wonder why these people have so much. But it's not something to resent. It's something that in America you have the power to change. Remember the advice from last week that a friend of mine's father had said to him, if you're not happy with what you have, stop complaining and do something about it. Now, that doesn't mean everybody can go out and make $10 million as a chief executive officer. But we can all choose what we do, where we do it, and how we get paid to do it. But there's more risk involved, quite frankly, and more stress when you're actually working at having more money. Far better to focus on your life and what inspires you in your life. I want to thank you for joining me again this week on the conversation. I call it a conversation, but we haven't started doing the call-ins. We will do that in a few months. But I consider it a conversation on getting there. Focus this week on what is your sweet inspiration. Until next week, I hope you have a good one.